crying in the arms of an older woman as a tall man stroked her hair. The man patted her back and turned away from her so he could bow. "Prince Stephen, welcome to Zhelkarin," he said as he straightened. "I am Randall Geraldan Demonal Zhelkarin, Lord of Zhelkarin." Stephen stepped down from the carriage and bowed. "I am pleased to meet you, Lord Randall. I see that Lady Sara Lee has already told you what happened." Lord Randall nodded. "She has. Tomorrow I will be sending armed parties out to all of my towns and holdings. Tonight, though, we welcome you to our home." Stephen bowed again. "We thank you for your greeting, Lord Randall. Please allow me to present my wife, Princess Charindes, and our children, Prince Carlin, Princess Sarin, and Princess Marin." Each of them had bowed as Stephen introduced them, and Lord Randall had returned those bows. Lord Randall nodded to the women who were holding Sara Lee. "I am pleased to present my wife, Lady Brendis. Our children are mostly away right now, but Dana is here, and she'll be going with you when you leave."
"Lord?"
Stephen asked as a puzzled frown twisted his features. Lord Randall's mouth twisted into a bitter grimace. "It's the duty of the heir of Zhelkarin to fight evil in this kingdom."
"And Alden was my nephew,"
Lady Brendis said as she pulled away from Sara Lee.
"Freylich is my oldest brother."
Stephen bowed again, but didn't see anything as he escorted his family up to the porch and followed the Zhelkarin family inside. Lord Randall led them to a library and waved to the chairs.
"Please make yourself comfortable, Prince Stephen. May I offer you some wine?"
he asked. Stephen bowed slightly as he replied, "Yes, thank you." The maid who was standing at the side of the room stepped forward and bowed, then showed Lord Randall a bottle. When he nodded his approval, she opened the wine and handed Lord Randall the cork, which he examined carefully. At his nod, she poured a small amount of the wine in a glass and handed it to him. Again he checked the wine very carefully, taking it to a lamp and examining it with the light behind it. He finally took a sip and held it in his mouth for a moment before swallowing. Lord Randall saw Stephen's puzzled look and smiled.
"I always check a new bottle before serving it to guests. I didn't once, and ended up serving vinegar to Prince Teravan. Terry wasn't very happy with me."
Stephen bowed and said,
"Thank you, Lord Randall."
Stephen accepted a glass from the maid, as did Shari. She then served Lady Brendis and Lady Sara Lee. Lord Randall raised his glass and said,
"Honored guests, we welcome you to our home."
Stephen replied,
"We are honored by your welcome."
Then they all drank. Lord Randall looked at Stephen and said,
"Now that the formalities have been attended to, I would like a closer look at your armor, Prince Stephen."
Stephen bowed slightly.
"Of course, Lord Randall."
He stood still as Lord Randall and Lady Brendis both examined his armor.
"Magnificent," Lord Randall murmured.
"Indeed," Lady Brendis agreed. "How long ago did you receive it? 10 years? "No, Lady Brendis, just eat,"
Stephen replied with a grin.
"Seems longer than that on occasion."
"Indeed. It's too bad you didn't bring the Sword of Zhelhallan with you,"
she continued, not looking at his face.
"I would have loved to see the result of touching the gifts together. I wonder what the result would be if we touched Sangdal Drakul to your armor."
Stephen shuddered, shocking her.
"I think it would be excessively unpleasant for me. Dandar Shandrake's magical influence on Sangdal Drakul far exceeds the power in my armor."
"You're afraid of it?"
Lady Sara Lee asked, as she moved around to look at Stephen's face.
"Yes, and with good reason,"
Stephen replied.
"After the children are in bed, I'll tell you why."
All three children said,
"Aw, Daddy,"
at the same time. A servant came to the door and said,
"'Your pardon, Lord Randall, but there's a group of officers who wish to join you. Shall I bring them in?'
Lord Randall nodded, and the man escorted Karvik, Major Zell Astell, and Captain Zell Corval into the library. Stavin stepped to Karvik's side and introduced everyone. Turning back to Karvik, he said, "'We'll be adding another member to the expedition. Lady Dana Zell Karin will be joining us. With Sang Del Drakel. You wanted to see Mary Death's sword?"
"Yes, Prince Stephen. Our people are setting up camp, and we're setting guards around the house. Will you allow us to send the guardswomen inside?"
Stavin grimaced.
"I don't think so, Carr. Major Zell Astell, what do you think?"
Warvin Zell Astell looked at his prince for a moment, then shook his head.
"I think His Majesty will understand in this instance, Your Highness. The Zell Karin family is related to the Zell Andral line."
Lord Randall looked at Stavin and asked,
"Guardswomen inside?"
Stavin gave Lord Randall an apologetic smile.
"King Keelan prefers to have guards posted close to Shari and the children. I think, given the relationship between our clans, it is unnecessary here."
Lord Randall took a deep breath, then shook his head.
"Please bring your guardswomen inside, Prince Stephen. While no one in my family or among my people is any threat to you, we have ample proof that someone in this region is."
Stephen bowed, then looked at Karvik. Without a word, Carr came to attention, bowed, and left. He was back in just a few breaths. Stavin smiled and said,
"Lord Randall, Lady Brendis, please allow me to introduce Lady Master Sergeant Mariah Garland Lissan Zelhalvis, Lady of Zelhalvis."
Both Lord Randall and Lady Brendis bowed automatically, though it was evident from their expressions that they were stunned by the introduction. Lady Zelhalvis smiled slightly as she returned the bow.
"Lady Zelhalvis, why..."
Lady Brendis asked as she gestured to Mariah's uniform.
"I was originally the third child, and joined the Royal Guards because I couldn't stand the idea that all I had to look forward to was parties, babies, and maybe a few love affairs. I'm afraid I never was one for the quiet, gentle pastimes. Zelhalvis is a small estate, and we don't have much land. My little brother and his son are my heirs."
Lord Randall bowed slightly and said,
"For whatever reason, we welcome you to our home."
Mariah bowed and said,
"I thank you for your welcome."
Then she turned to Stavin and bowed again.
"My women are ready, Your Highness."
Stavin nodded, then looked at Lord Randall.
"Could one of your servants show Master Sergeant Zelhalvis where the guest suite is, so she can post her guardswomen?"
Lord Randall nodded and pointed to the maid who had poured the wine. She bowed deeply, then walked to the door with Master Sergeant Zelhalvis at her side. Lady Brendis stepped forward and said,
"Princess Sharendis, let me take you and the children to the guest suite as well, so you can freshen up."
Shari bowed and said,
"Thank you, Lady Brendis. Ladies,"
she continued, looking at the maids. All three of them bowed, then followed as she left. Stavin was about to excuse himself as well when a short, armored figure entered the room. Karvik immediately moved between Stavin and the door, but Stavin said,
"It's all right, Kar."
Karvik turned to look at him, then nodded as his eyes grew wide. Stavin bowed slightly and said,
"I am pleased to meet you, Lady Dana,"
as Karvik moved out of the way. She was a small, stout woman, though still taller than Stavin, and carried a sword at her side. She stopped in her tracks.
"How did you know?"
Stavin smiled and said,
"Look,"
as he held out his arm. Even in the lamplight, the glow could be clearly seen.
"Dragon magic knows dragon magic."
Lady Dana drew Sang Del Drakel, and the room was filled with shafts of ruby-hued light.
"I've never seen it do that before,"
she whispered. Stavin looked at Lord Randall and smiled.
much more influence.
Lord Randall nodded, then cocked his head to the side.
Do you feel anything?
Stavin shook his head.
No, not really. Not like I do holding the sword of Zalhallan. Marina and I have played with the ruby fist on her staff, and I have only been able to detect the slightest changes in my armor when it's near me. I've never dared touch it, armored or not, because of the amount of dragon magic in me now.
Lord Randall was nodding.
I read that report of how your blood ignited the sword in the air of Zalhallan's hand.
Stavin nodded as he looked at the floor for a moment.
The children aren't here, so I'll tell you what wasn't in that report or any other. The dragon magic is dangerous to anyone who isn't fully encased in it like I am. During the pacification of Ferindia, one of my officers, a young man named Salar Zeljanvis, grabbed my gauntlets and the sword, thinking he could control the power. When the power fully engulfed him, he burned to ash. All that was left of him was his hand, still in my gauntlet. When Ambrin cut my cheek, he was engulfed in the magic flare, he and his daughter, Amana.
He bit his lips and shook his head sadly.
They both died screaming just an arm's length from me, and I couldn't save them. The magic consumed everything but the sword.
Stavin looked at the floor and sighed.
I'll never forgive myself for Amana's death. We rescued her at the beginning of my second expedition, one of six girls stolen for child brothels in Cavidia. But Shovar Zalhallan was her grandfather. She blamed me for his death, and she died hating me for it.
He shook his head again and took a few deep breaths.
Sala was just a kid, headstrong and proud. Like a lot of the young chosen, he only saw the power of the sword. He had no idea what could happen when that power took hold of him, and neither did I. If I hadn't been in full armor, I would have died that morning on the Zellhorgan.
Lady Sarah Lee stepped forward and put her hand on Stavin's armored shoulder.
It's no wonder you're afraid of it. And it's why I won't risk touching a dragon artifact. Even if I'm wearing my armor, I'm afraid of what might happen.
Lord Randall shook his head slowly.
What a terrible burden you carry,
he sighed, then shook his head sharply.
No matter. The evening meal will be ready soon. Vala,
he said when he spotted a maid.
Escort Prince Stephen to the guest suite.
The girl bowed deeply and said,
At once, Lord Randall.
Turning to Stavin, she bowed deeply again and said,
Please follow me, Your Highness.
Chapter 10 Stavin bowed to his hosts, then followed the girl out of the room. The suite she led him to was very nice, and Averin approached him immediately.
A bath is already drawn, Prince Stavin, if you'll follow me,
he said as he bowed. Stavin was clean and dressed in near record time. Then they all walked to the dining room together. The dining room was full of splendidly dressed people, and Stavin smiled when he finally recognized Lady Sarah Lee in a gorgeous gown. Another slightly younger woman was standing beside her, and it took a moment for Stavin to recognize Lady Dana without her armor. She was a full head shorter than Lady Sarah Lee, and had dark brown hair and hazel eyes. Where Lady Sarah Lee was lightly built and willowy, Lady Dana was heavily built, like a wrestler, with strong arms evident under her dress. Both women bowed as the royal family joined them.
"Prince Stephen, Princess Charindis, we welcome you to our home,"
Lady Dana said.
"Sarah was just telling me about the first time you met."
She looked at her tall blonde cousin and giggled. Lady Sarah Lee shook her head.
That embarrassment was the price I paid for being so arrogant. I did better the second time, and when you passed through the fort a few years later.
Shari chuckled.
Indeed you did. Did you ever get to read the Book of Inatat? I did. The general insisted that all of the officers read it. It was very informative. The king had the rest of the ancient quarry investigated, but no more tombs or artifacts were found. A group of scholars were going to follow the clues and see if they could find Klamath or Modok.
Stephen looked wistful for a moment and said, "Oh, I'd love to get in on that."
"You know Keelin would let you go if you asked, but he really needs you in trade,"
Shari pointed out.
"Your sense of duty would stop you before you even asked."
Stephen sighed and nodded.
"I know. It's just a dream."
Shari chuckled.
"Well, maybe they'll need us to translate if they find something. There still aren't that many scribes who can read the ancient glyphs."
Stephen grinned and nodded, then turned back to Lady Dana.
"If you'll forgive me for asking, how old are you? I already know Lady Cerilee is more than a year older than I am."
Lady Dana bowed slightly and replied,
"I celebrated the 21st anniversary of my birth the day after midwinter." "And you are the heir by right, so you have the power of high and low justice. Good,"
Stephen said with a sharp nod.
"If we catch that priest, he will be taken to the king for judgment,"
Lord Randall said from behind him.
"Only the king has the right to judge a priest, Prince Stephen. But I wouldn't worry about King Terravan. Terry's a follower of Lady Saren, and he's fairly devout. Whoever that priest is, he won't get away with slaughtering my nephew. But he'll be judged according to the laws of Caravia."
Stephen bowed deeply.
"My apologies, Lord Randall. I didn't mean to imply otherwise. It was just my thought that Lady Dana, having the right of high justice, also has the right to take him and however many followers he has with him into custody. Captain Zelkorval has a sufficient force, and my royal guards will assist if needed."
Lord Randall gave Stephen an intense look and said,
"Indeed. The evening meal is ready, Prince Stephen. I would be pleased to have you and your family at my right hand tonight. My children won't mind too terribly."
Lady Dana smiled.
"I don't mind at all, Prince Stephen. I will, however, insist on sitting next to your daughters."
She smiled at the twins.
"They're so cute."
Stephen smiled, bowed, then just had to laugh. Lord Randall was laughing as well.
"You have 9 moons left of your betrothal, Dina. Behave. I can tell Nellis is going to have his hands full with you."
Shari was looking at Dana curiously, so she elaborated.
"Nellisdal Harvaldin Fradal Zelkendan. He's one of the Lord of the Exchequer's assistants."
Stephen was nodding.
"I look forward to meeting him when we get to Moravad. Who will be heir after you marry him? My sister Alisan, and after her will be Geoffran."
A younger woman and much younger man had bowed when their names were spoken, and Stephen acknowledged both of them before turning back to Lord Randall and bowing slightly. Without another word, Lord Randall turned and led the way to the dining room. Stephen was unabashedly looking around, noting details he remembered from Meredith Nacarin Zelfordan's journals. Shari chuckled and pointed across the room toward a large fitted stone hearth. It was easily 4 spans wide and extended up to the roof rafters. Sometime in the past, the stones had been arranged to depict a heavily built winged figure that could pass for a dragon.
"I bet that's the fireplace she described. It matches, though even her description peels against the reality."
"Indeed,"
Lord Randall said. "For more than 2,700 years, the heirs of Zelkarin have received the diadem standing on that hearth. Most of the time, at least. Some, like my father, received it elsewhere because of extenuating circumstances." "And according to Meredith's journal, her brother received the diadem at an inn in Twin Bridges, just before she married Carlsten Zelfordan,"
Shari added.
"Absolutely correct, Princess Charindis," Lord Geoffran said. "You seem to have made quite a study of our famous ancestor."
Shari bowed slightly to the young man.
The Zelandral line claims Meredith ni Karen Zelfordan among their ancestors through her daughter Corvana. The Zelandral family has made extensive genealogical studies of their family, dating all the way back to the founding of Lux, many years before the arrival of Dandar Shandrake.
Really? Lord Geoffran said in an excited tone. I didn't know Zelandral went back that far. His father interrupted.
You should have paid more attention to your tutors, Jeff.
I certainly paid them enough.
Most of the royal families date from the time before Lux. The clan of Darwin ruled a small fishing village called Darwin's Port. It's still around and lies about 20 days' travel south of Lux, just inside the Caribbean border. When Dandar Shandrake came to Lux, they, like all of the rich chosen clans, adopted the Zell prefix and started calling themselves Zell Darwin, the chosen clan of Darwin.
Stavin was nodding.
Zelandral was from right outside Lux. They owned, or claimed they owned, about 2,000 dragons of prime farmland. The farm was called Andral, which meant something like rich land back then. Like Zell Darwin and Darwin's Port, Zelandral and all the associated clans originated there on that farm. According to the old maps and deeds, it was about where the Weaver's Quarter is now.
Lady Brendis interrupted.
Come to the table, please. The evening meal is ready.
Everyone bowed slightly and immediately headed for the table. Stavin was impressed. The table was made of time-darkened oak, and looked like a large tree had been cut lengthwise to make it. Try as he might, Stavin couldn't see any discontinuity in the wood grain anywhere. Stavin sat at Lord Randall's right hand, and Carlin was at Stavin's right. Lady Brendis had manoeuvred Shari to the seat at her right hand, and Saren and Maren were next. True to her word, Lady Dana took the seat next to Maren. Lady Sarah Lee took the seat opposite Shari. The rest of the Zelkarin family sorted themselves out, but no one ended up in their normal seats. The Zelkarin cooks did a wonderful job, considering the short notice they had received of the extra guests. The conversation was kept light, with Lord Randall discussing hunting and fishing with Stavin and Carlin, while the ladies discussed the current fashions in Twin Bridges. After the meal, the children were sent to bed while the grown-ups retired to the library, including Lady Dana and Lady Alisan, but not young Lord Geoffran. He hadn't done his 2 years in the army yet. He accepted the exclusion with good, if not enthusiastic, grace.
"Prince Stephen,"
Lord Randall began,
"while we have a long history of being dragon-blessed as a clan, none of us has ever really seen a dragon up close. Please, tell us what it was like."
Stavin didn't sigh like he normally did when someone asked for that story. These people had every reason to be curious about the dragon.
"I assume you know the basic story. Seems like everyone does. Facing the dragon was the most terrifying thing I've ever done. Her breath was like standing over the smith's forge, and the smell! No latrine pit ever smelled that bad."
None of the stories mentioned that, but if the heat hadn't been enough to burn the hairs out of my nose, the smell would have done it. Stavin smiled as he shook his head. His arms came out as wide as he could reach as he continued.
"The dragon's voice was as vast as a thunderstorm, though how she managed to speak at all has always puzzled me. I didn't see her lips move, not like ours do. When she told me to pick up the scales, she didn't mention how hot they would be. It was a good thing I had good sheepskin mittens on. She was not mean, but definitely abrupt with me. I was not a welcome guest in her cave. I was an intruder, plain and simple, and I still don't know why she didn't kill me."
Lord Randall was looking puzzled as he asked,
"You say her and she, as if you are certain the dragon was female. Why is that?"
Charondis snorted as she covered her mouth.
"You mean you haven't heard that one?"
she asked, in a voice that squeaked in amusement. Stavin was shaking his head again.
I have no proof, but I'm certain that the dragon on the mountain is a female. When we took Trade Town, I let the dragon magic fully take me. For a short time I felt as powerful as a dragon, but I felt something else as well.
He shook his head and grinned.
By the time Karvik convinced me to put the sword down, I knew that the dragon was beyond a doubt female.
Shari giggled again, and Stavin smiled as he shook his head.
It was a distinctly disturbing feeling.
Lord Randall exchanged glances with his wife and children.
We've never heard anything like that before. The stories about you tend to be much more heroic.
Stavin nodded.
Minstrels,
he said in an exasperated tone.
Do you know the story about me killing an Ocelan?
I heard it,
Lord Randall admitted with a nod.
Lord Randall, I've never even seen a live Ocelan, not even from a distance. While the dragon magic of my armor, along with the near-impervious nature of dragon scales, might protect me from an Ocelan's magic and claws, why would I hunt an intelligent being for sport? That would be like hunting a person for sport. Another minstrel's lie is that I hunt for sport at all. I hunt for meat, certainly. But I've always eaten what I killed.
Stavin shook his head slowly.
I've never even met that minstrel until the story had been circulating for a year.
Now Stavin's expression turned wry.
He was telling it in a tavern in Eastbridge when I walked in. I challenged his facts, and he swore by his mother's honour that he'd been there, right alongside me.
Shari was giggling uncontrollably by then.
When Stevie told me who he was, the fool ran for the back door. He even forgot his hat full of coins.
Stavin was nodding.
I told the tavern keeper to keep the hat and coins,
Stavin continued.
But I keep hearing that stupid story just about everywhere I go.
Now it was Lady Sarah Lee's turn to laugh.
I've heard similar stories about how we first met, and I know who spread them. One of my troopers fancied himself a bard, and she went to great lengths to make her reputation by ruining mine. Did you hear that I ordered you off that wagon and demanded that you kneel before me?
Shari giggled again.
I have. I pointed out to the featherhead that you did no such thing, and she had the audacity to swear she'd heard it from one of your superior officers.
Lady Dana's eyes widened as she grinned at her cousin.
I'll bet I know who that was.
So do I,
Lady Sarah Lee growled.
He certainly made an effort to destroy my career.
Stavin gave her a curious look, and she shrugged.
My major, Larad Zelhestal, he asked me to marry him, and I said no. After that, my evaluations went in the latrine, and I ended up resigning my commission on my 8th-year anniversary.
That's despicable,
Shari said in a disgusted tone. Lady Sarah Lee nodded.
I protested, but he's better connected than I am. His first cousin is Queen Rowena.
Stavin shook his head sadly.
Sometimes family patronage gets abused. An unfortunate commentary on the honour of some of our officers, sad to see,
Lady Brenda sighed.
I spoke to Rowena about it, but he's her family and she feels a need to shield him from his actions.
Stavin shook his head sadly.
We've seen the same things in Evandia. Why won't some men accept no gracefully?
Charondis grinned and said,
Dorvina,
then laughed when Stavin cringed.
You didn't accept no very gracefully, Stavin.
No, I suppose I didn't,
he admitted.
But at least I tried to improve myself to win her favour.
Charondis looked at the curious faces around them and explained.
Stavin was obsessed with Dorvina Kalkarin. She was one of the prettiest girls in his age group, and he faced War Leader Second Barvil Kalkarin to ask for her twice, but was denied both times. So,
After he was rejected the second time, he went to the dragon's cave alone because no one would go with him, to snatch a bit of gold and prove his courage to Barville. But Barville and his family ended up as Stephen's servants instead, and he still couldn't have her.
She laughed, and gave her husband an affectionate smile.
He asked my father for me just a few spans later.
Lady Sarah Lee was looking at Stephen with wide eyes, as her hand came up in a hesitant gesture.
Wait a moment. You had a family of Kel'Karens as your servants?
She asked. Stephen recognized the cause of her confused surprise immediately and shook his head.
Different spelling. C-A-R-I-N. One of Karvik's ancestors tried to prove they were related to Mary Death, but only proved beyond a doubt that they weren't.
Wait, wait, wait,
Lady Sarah Lee demanded, as both hands came up to her chest level.
Karvik Kel'Karen, the commander of your royal guards.
Karvik Kel'Karen, my best friend,
Stephen replied with a grin.
It was so awkward having him as my servant.
Sherendis nodded.
And Serena Kel'Karen is my godmother. I never did manage to give her an order. I asked for everything very politely.
I hate to break the mood, Lord Randall said as he looked around, but there is something serious we must discuss, Prince Stephen.
The lord was somber as he brought everyone back to the trouble they faced. Stephen nodded.
The priests of the Cutter.
Yes. There's been a resurgence of Lebowan's worship lately due to the troubles we're facing. People are looking for easy answers and someone to blame for their troubles. Unfortunately, those are the kind of people who turn to Lebowan and then turn on their neighbors.
Stephen was shaking his head as his jaws clenched.
But why do they have to turn on the weak and helpless?
Because they are weak and helpless,
Lady Brenda said softly.
The honorless always do.
Stephen looked at Sherendis and smirked.
Not all the weak and helpless are weak or helpless, are they, darling?
Did I miss something? Lord Randall asked.
Sherendis nodded.
The reason Captain Zel'Korval and his troops are with us is that three of the Cutter's followers attacked us in Kandalvad. They thought we were helpless. Just women and children and servants. Fortunately, Stephen left his dragon's tongue behind when he went to the fort to show off. I used it to kill them instead of them killing us.
You killed them, Princess?
Lady Brendis asked in a surprised tone. Sherendis smiled and bowed her head.
All girls of our people receive the same training as the boys until we are 10. In addition, my father is a war master and was the war master of the academy in Cavenston until War Master Kel'Karen took over. He ensured that I was as proficient with my walking staff as his boys were with their dragon's tongues.
Even though she couldn't see her opponents,
Stephen added. Lady Dana turned her head towards Stephen, then snapped back towards Shari.
That's what I was missing. The early stories referred to the blind Princess Sherendis. My sight was restored about 3 years ago, just after the Ferindian annexation,
Shari explained.
Since then I've worked out once every 10 days with the royal guards, and with Stevie on occasion.
Lord Randall chuckled.
I'll bet they were horribly surprised. Not many of the people they judge are able to fight back.
No, they can't,
Lady Brendis said softly.
People like Alden and his friends.
Everyone quieted down at the reminder of why they were there.
Whoever the priest leading that group is, he is going to face the king for his actions,
Lord Randall said in a soft, angry tone. Lady Brendis excused herself then, and Lord Randall went with her. Shari nodded her head to the younger ladies.
We should all get to bed early. Tomorrow is going to come all too soon.
With a bow, she led Stephen to their suite. Shari and Stavin cuddled close that night, so they could speak without disturbing anyone else.
"Shari, I don't like taking you and the kids into danger like this. It really isn't that important for us to continue to Maravat." "Yes and no, Stevie,"
Shari replied.
"The trade mission isn't that important, but someone needs to go to King Taravan and tell him how bad this really is. Someone who isn't going to be dismissed as having an agenda of their own. Stevie, we may not be in Evandia, but these are good people. People that need protection from that priest.
And his followers.
It isn't just him. His followers are the ones murdering people. He's just the leader. God's below, Shari. We weren't that far behind him. If we hadn't stayed the extra day in Kandalvad, so I could show off, we might have been able to stop the slaughter at the mine. No, Stevie. From your description and what Carr told me, we were 3 days behind them. Staying didn't make a difference. But we can make a difference in Maravat. And we can't let them think they chased us off. We can't let the followers of the Cutter think they chased off the Evandian royal family. We can't let anyone think they are that powerful.
The expedition moved on early the next morning. Karvik rode close to Stavin's side as soon as they reached the road.
"The troops and guards are all ready to fight, Steve. The servants Lord Zelkarin sent out to see to our needs talked about Alden Zelkoy a lot. He was a very kind and polite young man and was very popular among the servants."
Stavin nodded, but kept his head up and his eyes in motion.
"We got the same impression inside. It would take an insane fool to attack a party like ours, but..."
"But we're talking about the followers of Level One," Karvik completed Stavin's thought. "I've already given orders for double guards until we get to Maravat. If I could, I'd turn us around and go home."
Stavin nodded.
"I hate to admit it, but so would I. Shari and I discussed it last night. The trade mission isn't that important, but we can't allow anyone to think we let Level One's followers chase us away, and honestly, I want that priest. I don't know if he's the one who sent those men after Shari and the kids, but I don't know that he isn't."
Karvik gave Stavin a very serious look.
"If it gets that far, you stay back with Shari and the kids."
"Do you really think Level One's followers are a threat to me?"
Stavin demanded in an aggressive tone.
"No, I just want you to leave a few for me to kill."
Karvik grinned. "You've already gotten your fourth star and hollowed them out as well. Give me a chance to catch up." Stavin's anger cooled as fast as it had flared up, and his laughter echoed off the hills. Chapter 11. The expedition continued toward Maravad at the wagon's pace. 2 days later they encountered a town that appeared to be deserted. No people were visible in the streets. Stray farm animals wandered around, foraging for food. Captain Zelkorval sent 20 troopers forward to investigate. They returned 3 spans later with 1 young man. He was obviously terrified of the troops and fell to his knees as he faced the captain, clasping his trembling hands. His eyes were wide open, and though he was easily 20 years old, he looked like a child begging not to be punished. His voice quavered as he said,
"They came at us like a pack of mad dogs, Lord Captain. They just fell on us and we couldn't resist them. That priest, that Lord Zeldravel, the most perfect high priest..."
He paused and spit on the ground, as if the words had left a foul taste in his mouth.
"He condemned almost everyone. I was spared, but..."
He paused again to wipe away the tears that were streaming down his face.
"But he made us stone our families. He made us kill our kin."
Now the man bowed as low as he could, but not in respect. He was just crying so hard he couldn't stay upright. Stavin stayed back until he heard the story. Then he started growling deep in his chest in a manner that made everyone step back in worry. It took 6 more days to reach Maravad, the capital city of Caravia. Along the way they saw more evidence of the priest's rampage through the kingdom.
Every village had lost at least one person to the cutter's culling. A few had lost whole families. Another had lost nearly everyone. And every revelation caused the troops, Evandian and Caravian, to become more determined to stop the cutter's priests. Moravad was magnificent. Tall buildings could be seen from 30 dragons away, standing above the trees. When the outskirts of the city came into view, they could see that the walls had been maintained, but showed an attention to detail that impressed Stavin. Shari was just as impressed.
"I remember reading about the walls of Moravad. They are supposed to remind everyone that... Oh, how did they put it?"
She frowned in concentration for a moment, then smiled.
"Only through strength can there be peace, for there will always be those who see peacefulness as weakness."
Stavin nodded.
"I remember that from the Caravian history text in Cavanston, but Dandar Shandrig said it first about Lux. I'd say that they have made a very good show of strength. But where is everybody?"
Captain Zel'Korval had sent one of his lieutenants ahead as soon as the outskirts of the city were seen. "Tell the guards who we are and who we are escorting," he ordered, and bowed slightly to acknowledge the lieutenant's bow. No one challenged them at the city gates. There were no guards at all. In fact, the gates stood open, but not completely. They were both slightly away from the pillars, but uneven, as if whoever opened them had no pride in his city. The ride through the city itself was quiet as well, and the Caravian troops looked around nervously. Most of them drew their swords without being told to. The silence was unusual, and set Stavin's nerves on edge. Riding close to the carriage, Stavin motioned Shari to the window. He whispered,
"Something is very wrong, Shari. I didn't expect a parade, but there aren't even any Gorkas on the street. I haven't seen a handful of people since we entered the gates. Keep the kids away from the windows, and you too."
Shari gave him a long look, then withdrew into the carriage and closed the curtain. Stavin heard the hiss of metal on wood as Shari and the servants slid the safety shutters into place. As they drew near the palace, they started seeing more people, but they vanished as quickly as they appeared. The great palace gates finally came into view, and the cavalry split to allow the carriage through. The gates were closed, forming a barrier of ornate steel bars taller than three men. Stavin was impressed, despite having seen drawings and paintings of the gates. They stood taller than three men on one another's shoulders, and gleamed gold in Arendar's light. The Caravian royal crest was centered in the gates, above head height on everyone, even Karvik. The gates looked strong enough to stop an army, but the men guarding them looked like bandits as they stared through the bars. Karvik rode to the gates and said, "Open the gates for His Highness Prince Stephen of Evandia." The oldest of the guards looked at Karvik and spit through the bars.
"We doesn't take orders from the likes of you."
Captain Zel'Korval immediately rode to Karvik's side.
"Open the gates immediately," he demanded. "We doesn't take orders from you neither, soldier boy," the man replied with a sneer.
Captain Zel'Korval was left momentarily speechless.
"Summon Lord General Zel'Nestal," he demanded.
Now all the guards chuckled.
"Ain't no such general anymore," the man replied with a smile. "High Priest Zel'Dravel judged him defective and condemned him."
Stavin dismounted, strode up to the gates and snapped,
"Open these gates! No!"
Now the guard focused on Stavin.
"No normal man could be your size. You must be defective as well."
"Open these gates!"
Stavin said once again. A growl that drew stares of alarm from Captain Zel'Korval and his men emanated from Stavin's chest. Karvik just stepped back and grasped the hilt of his sword. The guard was staring at Stavin as he said,
"Only on the orders of High Priest Zel..."
Stavin's dragon's tongue flashed in the sun, silencing the guard permanently as it darted between the bars and his ribs to split his heart.
The other guards backed away, some shouting for help, others shouting bloody murder as they ran around in panic. Stavin looked at Captain Zelkorval and said,
"I believe that King Teravan is in danger, Captain."
The captain looked unsure, but bowed as he said, "I agree, Prince Stephen."
"Then I think you should ask for assistance from the Evandian Royal Guards in ensuring the king's safety."
Captain Zelkorval looked Stephen in the eye for a moment, then bowed deeply.
"Prince Stephen, the Caribbean army requests the assistance of the Evandian Royal Guards in ensuring the health and safety of King Teravan and the royal family."
Stavin bowed, then looked at Karvik and said,
"Major?"
Karvik bowed, then snapped, "Flying geese!" And the warriors formed up behind him, while the royal guards readied themselves for battle. Karvik gestured toward the locked gate and said,
"Prince Stavin, would you be so kind as to get the lock?"
Stavin grinned again. The bolt of the lock was visible through the gap between the gates. His dragon's tongue came up and back down in a flash as it sheared through the great steel lock as if it had been soft copper. Captain Zelkorval led the charge, shouldering the right-hand gate aside as he ran, and behind him came 150 fighters, intent on finding the king and his family. Stavin watched them go, then motioned the carriage through the gates and had the driver park against the wall. The baggage and supply wagons pulled in next, and the drivers parked around the carriage, forming a barrier. Stavin nodded in satisfaction when the drivers all drew weapons. When he turned back toward the carriage, Shari was beside it with her dragon's tongue in her hands.
"We'll wait here for Karvik and Major Zell Astel to clear the palace,"
he said absently. His attention was focused on the shouts and screams coming from the palace. Shari nodded, then looked around.
"How could they have taken the palace?"
she asked, more to herself than Stavin. Stavin shook his head.
"I don't know. Probably by deceit. I can't imagine the palace or royal guard being taken honorably."
Karvik and Major Zell Astel led a 10-man party of royal guards into the palace. They heard and signs of violence as the guards and cavalry rampaged through the palace. The bodies of men wearing the robes of Lebowan's priesthood lay littered in the passageways like trash. Most of the doors into the offices and suites were open or locked from the inside, but one door caught their attention. It was locked from the outside. Karvik glanced at the major and received a nod, then drew back in the bolts. The door opened easily, and as one they raced inside with weapons drawn. What they found froze them in their tracks. A tall, dark-haired girl of no more than 16 years of age stood in the center of the room, bare-naked, but holding a heavy silver candlestick like a club. She shouted,
"Stay away from me!"
as she took a fighting stance.
"My lady, I am Major Warvin Zelastel of the Evandian Royal Guard," the major said as he sheathed his sword. "We are here to render whatever assistance we can."
The girl's expression changed from one of desperate defiance to one of forlorn hope.
"Your royal guardsman?"
she asked in a hushed tone as tears came to her eyes.
"We are,"
Karvik agreed softly, stepping forward and offering the girl his cloak.
"Where are your clothes?"
She replied, "That bastard Zeldravel took them,"
as she quickly wrapped herself in Karvik's cloak. It was dragging on the ground.
"He was inspecting me to see if I was fit to be his queen."
Karvik looked at his men and said, "Find something for her to wear," and six of the men immediately left to do his bidding. It was just a few moments later that one man returned with a deep blue robe. Karvik motioned him forward and watched as he approached the girl, then went to one knee with his head bowed a pace from her.
"My lady, I think this will fit you,"
as he blindly held out the robe.
"What is your name?"
she asked as she took the robe and hastily put it on under Karvik's cloak. He replied,
"I am Vardin Araldan Fordin Zelfridan, lady,"
without looking up.
"I thank you, Vardin Zelfridan," she said as her back stiffened.
She looked down at him, and a trembling smile curved her lips.
"I am Crown Princess Presumptive, Elisan Glorana Bettina Zeldarvin, heir apparent of Karivia."
Vardin came to his feet and took a step back, then bowed as deeply as he could. Behind him, every member of the group was similarly bowing. Karvik shared a look with Major Zelastel and said,
"We have to get her out of here."
The Major simply nodded in reply. It took a long time for Karvik to return to the gates. He delivered the princess to the royal guardswomen, then went to Stavin. "We found the princess, but not the king, queen, or prince." He glanced over his shoulder to where the guardswomen were gathered around the girl. "She doesn't know where her family is." Stavin nodded and turned to walk over to the woman. The princess was a girl in her middle teens, and was dressed in a brilliant blue robe.
"Princess Elisan, I am Prince Stavin," he said, then bowed deeply. "Prince Stavin, you've got to find my father, Mum and Cal, too. That filthy piece of shit took them somewhere."
She paused and looked terribly sad for a moment, then whispered,
"He said they were dead."
Stavin bowed slightly. "She's going to get along with Shari just fine."
"We will find them, Princess Elisan. For now, I think you would be safer with my family."
He held out his hand to usher her to the carriage. Princess Elisan looked where Stavin was pointing, then walked over to the carriage. She returned Shari's bow, then glanced at Stavin. Stavin smiled, then said,
"Princess Elisan Zeldarvin, may I present my wife, Princess Sharindis Ni Aniston Zelandral?"
Princess Elisan looked at the dragon's tongue in Shari's hands, then looked back towards Stavin. Stavin grinned as he explained,
"The women of Kel'Kavin are trained to protect their children."
Shari nodded, then spoke to Stavin.
"We'll keep the guardswomen out here with us. You go find King Teravan and the rest of the royal family."
Stavin bowed, then turned away. Master Sergeant Zell Halvis started giving orders as Karvik joined Stavin.
"How much of the palace have you searched?"
Stavin asked.
"The search is still going on. We brought the princess out as soon as we found her, Steve,"
Karvik said softly as he put his hand on his friend's shoulder.
"She was being held in the nude. We had to scrounge that robe."
"Why?"
Karvik was silent for a moment, then whispered,
"She said Zeldraval was inspecting her for flaws."
Stavin made an unpleasant sound, but it was one Karvik was long accustomed to. Ever since he'd used the sword of Zelhallen at Skycon, Stavin had growled like that when he was truly angry. The palace was all but deserted, except for the bodies of men wearing robes emblazoned with the cutter's shears. Stavin and Karvik had crossed half the palace before they were confronted. A man in the blue robes of a priest inquisitor came around a corner, stopping in his tracks when he saw Stavin. His arm came up and he pointed a finger at Stavin as he shouted,
"I know you, Stavin Zelandral. Kneel before me and be judged."
Stavin just kept walking.
"Kneel before Lebowan's anointed," he shouted again.
Karvik punched the priest in the face with an armored fist, felling him like a spiked ox. Stavin looked a question at Karvik and received a shrug in reply. He was annoying. Stavin's expression went through several transformations before he settled on amused.
"Anybody got a bucket of water?"
he asked as he looked at the 10 guardsmen around him. There were no buckets, but one of the guardsmen found a pitcher in a nearby room. Stavin nodded and said,
"Wake that fool up."
The priest sputtered back to consciousness.
"I condemn you," he shouted when he saw Karvik. "I condemn you all."
Stavin looked at him and said,
"Shut your fool mouth, priest. Where is King Teravan?"
"The royal family is defective,"
the priest said loudly.
High Priest Zeldravel found the boy defective and condemned the parents, then took Caravia for Lebowan. King Carvar Zeldravel rules Caravia now.
He was shouting by the time he finished, but no one was impressed. Stephen exchanged a look with Carvik and tilted his head to the side. Carvik nodded and pulled the priest from the floor with no apparent effort. He threw the fool against a wall, and another of the warriors caught him as he bounced off and threw him against the opposite wall. The game continued that way until the fool couldn't stay on his feet. Stephen asked again,
"Where is King Teravan? Where is Queen Rowena? Where is Prince Kaldan?"
The priest sputtered,
"Dungeons! Under the palace!"
Stephen looked at his guardsman and said,
"Bring him!"
He looked at the priest and said,
"How do we get down there?"
"Only the highest of the priesthood have access. Where is the door?"
Stephen demanded as he growled. The priest pointed, and Stephen led the way. The door was obvious once they reached it. It had a huge bolt at the top, middle, and bottom of the door, and a large iron lock on the middle bolt.
"You'll never break that lock,"
the priest sputtered. Stephen just looked at him for an instant, then struck with his dragon's tongue to cut all three bolts, and kicked the door open. Without a word, he headed down the stairs, grabbing a torch in his left hand as he passed. The stairs led a long way down under the palace. A guard stood and faced them, then died where he stood when Stephen drove his dragon's tongue through his heart. Stephen looked at his guardsmen and said,
"Find the royal family!"
The guardsmen spread out, opening doors and checking the people inside. One of the guardsmen shouted,
"This one's locked!"
And Stephen quickly went and cut the lock, then withdrew the bolt and kicked the cell door open. The man inside sat up, holding his hands up to ward off the light, and perhaps a feared attack. Stephen asked,
"Who are you?"
in a gentle tone.
"Nobody, Lord,"
the man answered in a trembling voice.
"I am nobody."
He was shrinking away from Stephen like an abused child. Stephen stepped forward and went to one knee.
"What is your name?"
he asked in a soft, reassuring tone, usually reserved for frightened children.
"Teravan, Lord,"
the man answered in a trembling voice, then flinched away from an expected blow.
"King Teravan, I am Prince Stephen of Evandia."
The king looked up into Stephen's eyes at last and asked,
"You came anyway?"
in a hoarse whisper. Stephen nodded.
"We didn't know what had happened until we got here. We've retaken the palace, King Teravan." "The mage,"
the king began, but was interrupted by a fit of coughing. Stephen looked up at Carvik. Carvik nodded, then backed away.
"King Teravan, we need to get you out of here. We're searching for your wife and son, but your daughter is outside with my wife and children."
"Cal is dead,"
the king whispered.
"They told me he was defective and they..."
The king broke down, sobbing as he finally stammered,
"They made me watch while they stoned him."
The king broke down in tears, and Stephen knelt to rub his back gently. There was nothing else he could do or say. Carvik walked in and stopped behind Stephen. He said, "We found another locked door," in a soft voice. Stephen handed his dragon's tongue over, but didn't stand.
"Bring them here."
It was just a few moments before Carvik returned.
"Steve,"
he whispered in a hoarse voice,
"it's bad."
Stephen looked up and saw just how shaken Carvik was. Standing, he went out of the king's cell and touched his friend's arm. Carvik was trembling.
"How bad?"
he asked, unable to imagine what could do this to a warrior like Carr.
"They tortured her to death, Steve,"
he whispered.
"I don't know who she was, but God's below, Steve.
I've never seen anything like what they did to her.
Karvik was shaking his head as the memory of what he'd seen blinded him with tears. Stavin took a deep breath and growled,
"Show me!"
Karvik nodded and led the way.